I'm Tori.
And I'm Audrey.
And we're two sisters diving into the darker side of human nature and exploring the unknown.
From chilling true crime and gruesome murders
to spine-tingling paranormal encounters,
we cover it all.
So grab a flashlight
and maybe a blanket,
because you're listening to
The Guilty and the Ghostly. What episode is this?
Eight.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's eight.
Okay.
Okay, well, let's get into it.
Here we go. 10 o'clock. 10:08 on Wednesday.
Okay.
Because it's like, you've been working?
Yeah.
Me too. But the kids have been driving me nuts with practices and going here for the summer and going there for the summer. And then one of them had their first heartbreak this last week, 2 weeks.
Yeah.
That's been rough. As a mom, it sucks because you want to fix it, make everything right, and make her feel better, but there's literally nothing you can do. So you just have to let her fight through it. It sucks. But they're young. They'll get over it.
Yeah.
So when we release this, the day before is Father's Day. So I wanted to pick a story in honor of Father's Day.
Okay.
But every story I pulled up was like, this dad killed his whole family.
Oh my
and
gosh.
I didn't want to do that. Not for Father's Day. But I found this story, which I've actually told you about in a previous episode.
Okay.
So we'll see if you remember it.
Hopefully I do.
Hopefully you do. Maybe you will. Maybe you won't.
Yeah, it's been a crazy week, so.
And we should say, so the podcast studio is ready.
It is.
The next episode we will drop will have video. We tried tonight, but I'm not sure if the microphones were working with the new setup, and I was too scared to record and it not work, and it being so late already, so.
Yeah.
We just gonna do audio.
We played it safe. But next episode, it's gonna be fun, you know?
Yeah, and you'll see all the cute stuff we have now.
Audrey's definitely been going at the podcast room. It looks completely different in here. We should have taken before and after pictures.
We should have. We can take a picture tonight, though, so they can at least see what it looks like in the background.
Yes.
So I'm excited. Okay, back to the story.
Yes.
Okay, so this story starts with Leon Gary Plausch, I believe is how you pronounce his last name, but he's known as Gary. He was born on November 10th, 1945 in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. He grew up in the area for most of his life. He attended Louisiana State University and joined the military. He worked his way up to Master Sergeant. He met his wife, June, in late 1969 when she had just started her singing career at local venues. So they met at a bar, and it was love at first sight. They were married within less than a month of meeting each other.
Wow.
Quick.
You know, it's pretty often nowadays.
Nowadays?
Yeah.
I guess it is, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
It happened a lot back then, too, though, but I feel like they stuck together longer because it was kind of frowned upon. But, yeah, that's wild. I couldn't imagine marrying somebody within a month. Because you don't know them.
They could be a serial killer for all you know.
They could. So after they got married, Gary later on, he retired and began a career as a heavy equipment salesman. For a brief time, he worked as a cameraman for a local TV station. So he's kind of done a little bit of everything. He was a big LSU fan and the New Orleans Saints fan. He enjoyed fishing, cooking. He also coached a little league team. And June and Gary finally decided to start a family, and they had three boys and one girl. So they're like the all-around, all-American family.
Yeah.
As the boys got older, they decided to enroll their boys into a martial arts studio, school. I don't know what you call them. Gym.
Yeah.
And they specialized in, I don't know how to say this word. Looks like Hapkido. It's a Korean discipline. Not sure what that means. I should have looked that up.
One of the girls I work with used to do that.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's just like the certain type that they did.
It's like another form of karate and jiu-jitsu and stuff like that. Just
maybe not.
I don't know. Don't quote me on that. I'm pretty sure.
Maybe not.
Like martial artsy.
We'll just pretend like it is.
Okay.
The boy's main instructor was Jeff Doucette. Jeff was born on February 3rd, 1959, in Port Arthur, Texas. It was known that Jeff had a really rough upbringing with abuse as he was growing up, but he was a talented athlete and then later joined the Marines. After leaving the Marines, he moved in with one of his brothers in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and he actually became an instructor there at one of the martial arts schools and also started installing carpets on the side to make extra money.
Okay, and this is like one of their kids?
No, this is their kids' martial arts coach.
Okay.
So he like I said, he became an instructor at the martial arts school, and then he began installing the carpets on the side for his brother for extra money. He was well-liked in the community by both parents and students of martial arts, and he would often travel outside the state with the students for competitions, including the Plosh family. The Plosh boys seemed to thrive in the martial arts community under Jeff's guidance. As the family became more involved with the sport, Jeff became closer to the Plosh family, particularly their son, Jody. So Jody was born on April 27th, 1972. His talent really started showing in the martial arts community, and he decided to just focus all his time on martial arts. So he quit doing basketball and baseball to focus all his time on martial arts.
How old was he at this time? Did it say?
He would be, I'm not sure. He's younger than 11. I know that.
Yeah, because you said he was born in
1972.
Oh.
We're way back when, girl. Vintage.
Wow. Okay.
So Jeff and Gary actually became really good friends. So the dad and the martial arts coach, they became really good friends. Gary even helped Jeff get a TV feature on Jeff's martial arts school. Jeff would often develop personal relationships with his students, taking them to the movies and the park, and even teaching them how to drive. The community trusted him entirely with their children. Red flag.
Yeah, I'm kind of looking at you like
giving me the side eye.
That's going on there, because when you mentioned he was, you know, taking his time with one of their children, I was like, how old is this kid?
Yeah.
That's not really normal unless they're older, you know what I mean?
And for me to have, which I know it was different back then, I could not imagine sending one of my children just with their coach on their own. Like, go to the movies with them, go to the park with them, let him teach you to drive. There are way too many creepos out there.
Like, even, yeah.
Even in, like, May's private lessons, when it's just her and the coach, I'm in the room with them.
Yeah.
There's no way, no way she's being alone with a coach. It's crazy.
But, you know, like you said, times were different.
Yeah, it was back in the 1970s, so.
Everybody was.
We just. Yeah, and I don't know if it was that it wasn't well known. I think it was just, it was swept under the rug. People would just ignore it and be like, oh, that's Uncle Creepy over there. We just don't go over there. Eventually, June and Gary's relationship started to unravel. By August of 1983, they decided to separate. Gary soon moved out, and June had since given up on her singing career. June said that her relationship with Gary was very controlling. She was often accused of seeking attention from others, and she had grown tired of being accused of it. Soon, Jeff began spending more time with June and the kids, and they eventually started a romantic relationship.
Oh, see, that's even strange, too, because Gary helped Jeff get his name out there.
Yeah. And he's supposed to be, yeah, and he's going to move in on his girl? Like, what? Bro code, man. Bro code.
It's giving red flags all over. But, you know, I could just have it confused.
Well, unfortunately, It wasn't very long, and soon things began surfacing about Jeff that showed he might not be the outstanding community pillar everyone thought he was. He was under investigation for fraud and embezzlement. He often wrote hot checks, and then he was selling sports equipment to supposedly raise money for their gym. But after people would give him money for, like, raffle tickets, or they would purchase certain equipment from him to help raise money for these competitions and stuff that they have going on, he would take their money, and then he would just never give them the equipment that he supposedly had.
What the heck?
But even after all of that, even after him taking everybody's money and not giving them the equipment, somehow he was still able to come out on top and keep his reputation as, like, the stand-up guy that had this gym, helped kids. I think everybody just kind of turned a blind eye, like, oh, he's such a good coach. Like, we'll just ignore what's going on.
Well, I mean, what was going on wasn't a horrible thing either. Like, hot chicks, I know.
Yeah, at that point, yeah.
It's not...
he's
murdering someone.
Yeah.
Soon. Tax fraud.
Do what?
It's kind of like tax fraud.
So you're saying that's okay? I'm just teasing. look. Soon, his relationships with students at the gym, Jody in particular, started to take a dark turn. Red flag number two. He used the trust that he had earned in the community and started grooming and exploiting the kids.
I saw that coming now.
From a mile away. He also used the romantic relationship with June to have unlimited access to poor Jody. So on...
What?
Yeah. On Sunday, February 19th, 1984, the Plosh family would be forever changed at the hands of Jeff. Jeff went to Jody's home and asked to borrow her car and asked if Jody could go with him to look at a carpet that he would be installing. Seeming like a normal day, June agreed. She just asked Jeff to have Jody back home at a decent hour that evening since there was school the next day. So she's just thinking it's her boyfriend wanting to take her kid to go look at this job. Maybe he needs help with something. He'll bring him right back.
But how old is the kid? Like
11 years old at this point.
Why would he ask an 11-year-old to help him?
Well, I mean, yes and no. And that's the tricky part here, to be the devil's advocate, is it wouldn't be any different than, I mean, it is, but it isn't. Like, if Seth was like, hey, can I borrow Jackson real quick to go do this real quick? I would send him with, you know, no thought with Seth. But then again, that's his uncle, not mom's boyfriend. That who knows? It didn't even say how long they were together, so I'm not even sure how long they were together. So his true intentions were much more sinister. He had no plans of taking Jody to look at the carpet, but to kidnap the 11-year-old boy.
Like, you know, that's crazy.
Yeah. So at this point, Jeff had told Jody that he was in debt and owed about $15,000. He told him that he needed to leave the state to avoid getting into trouble. He then convinced Jody to run away with him. Jeff went home and grabbed a sleeping bag, clothes, and other essentials, and they began heading to Port Arthur, Texas, to Jeff's mother's house. As time went on and no sign of Jody or Jeff, June started to call Jeff. But of course, he just didn't answer her calls. They kept going unanswered. She wasn't very concerned yet and decided not to alert authorities at this time. So she's still thinking they're just not back yet. However, Jeff and Jody spent 2 days at Jeff's mother's house. Jeff asked Jody if he was still good with the plan of leaving state. And Jody was nervous about it. He really didn't want to, but at that point, he really didn't know how to tell him no. Like, that's his mom's boyfriend. That's his karate teacher. I mean, having that power dynamic, he didn't want to, like, rock the boat. He didn't want to disappoint his karate teacher or his mom's boyfriend. He's just like, yeah, let's go. Let's do it.
I mean, even so, he's so young. And probably really confused. It's all about Jeff is literally grooming him, so he maybe wants to go, you know?
Yeah, exactly. He doesn't know any better.
Exactly.
He asked him if he was good with the plan for leaving state. Jody was nervous, really unsure at this point. He didn't really know how to say no, and this is his mentor, his mother's boyfriend. So Jody said, yes, let's go. To make sure that they were not recognized, Jeff shaved off his beard and dyed Jody's hair. So he's totally altering their appearance to avoid being seen. They then got a bus ticket in Orange, Texas, and headed to Los Angeles, California. Once they arrived in Los Angeles, Jeff borrowed money from a friend and secured a room at the Hilton Hotel. So at this point, Mom's still thinking her kid's in Louisiana. They're all the way in California. The next day, he tried to get a more permanent place at Canoga Park, but was unable to. He then purchased tickets for the two of them to Anaheim, California. It's now been 4 days since June has heard from her son or Jeff.
And she's not, like, calling.
So at this point, she does call her brother, who was actually a deputy sheriff at the time. Okay. So at least 4 days is wild, though. That kind of reminds me of, did you ever watch Abducted in Plain Sight on Netflix?
Yeah.
It's kind of what it reminds me of, like, just waiting, like, oh, they'll just come back. They'll just come back. And it's about the same time period, if I'm not mistaken. So it's got to be just a sign of the times. And they didn't have cell phones, so it's not like she could immediately call him and get an answer. They would have to figure out where they're at.
And also, like, the first 48 hours is crucial. Why would you wait that long?
But they didn't know then.
Sorry.
Yeah, they didn't know then. I think it's just from the times. So she finally reported her son's disappearance to the authorities, and they immediately started investigating the case. While the police were investigating, June knew where Jeff was from, and so she had a friend actually drive to Port Arthur, but once they got to Jeff's mom's house, she told them, yeah, they've been here, but they already left a couple of days ago. So that is terrifying. They have no other leads. She informed Gary, finally at this point, what's going on. So 4 days after this kid went missing, she finally let his dad know that he's missing.
See, that's insane. As Gary, I would be.
Oh, yeah. And the FBI was brought in at this point to help with the case. For the next week, Jeff and Jody were staying in a hotel near Disneyland. Jeff actually even took Jody to the amusement park, and they went out on outings together. But most of the days, Jody had to stay in the hotel room for hours on end while Jeff was supposedly out looking for a job. So they would go out together, but then he would also just be kept in the hotel room by himself while Jeff went to go look for his job. Wild.
That's strange.
So now I'm going to say trigger warning. There is child sexual assault, so fast forward a few seconds. I'm not going to go into detail about it, but it is mentioned. So fast forward now. During this time, Jeff was sexually assaulting Jody. Jody had opportunities that he might have could have escaped, but again, due to that psychological hold that Jeff had on Jody, he never really tried to get away. Because again, there's that power dynamic. It's his mom's boyfriend. He's his coach. He's his mentor. He's been grooming him for months.
It's like the exact way a person, a victim of grooming would react.
Yes.
That's so horrible.
So awful. The FBI had tapped the family's phone in hopes that either Jeff or Jody might try and call home, and after about a week, Jeff finally reached out to June. The FBI told her, just play along, see what information you can get, just hold him on the phone as long as you can. Say whatever you gotta say to keep him on the phone so we can trace it. So that's what she did. And Jeff instructed June where he would meet her and told her not to involve anyone else. He even let Jody speak to his mother on the phone at that time. So June was able to keep them on the phone long enough for the FBI to trace the call to the hotel where they were staying at, finally.
Smart thinking.
Yes.
Police knew what they were doing in this situation.
And can you imagine as a mom having to talk to your child's abductor, who is also your boyfriend, and just, like, play it cool, like nothing's wrong, and the FBI's not sitting right there next to you listening to every word you're saying?
I couldn't do it. I would probably go off, honestly.
Just start bawling. I mean, there's no way I could even be coherent. I would just be crying. On February 29th, the FBI stormed the room that Jeff and Jody were staying in. They were able to arrest Jeff and take Jody into protective custody. At first, Jody denied that anything inappropriate happened, but after an examination that was done, it was confirmed that Jody had been sexually assaulted. And for him to have to go through that trauma with his abuser, and then he has to go get examined by a doctor, that to me, that has to be a whole nother issue. To have to go relive through all that and just an invasion of privacy. Yes. A traumatic what? Is she a traumatic expense? Is that what she said?
No.
Oh.
I said experience.
Experience. Oh, okay. That makes more sense. Did she say expense, Elizabeth? I thought so. Oh my god, Tori.
My words slipped up.
That's like that day that you said triangular, or triangula, the Bermuda Triangula, and I said, the what? And you said, I said, Bermuda Triangula. I said, no. Okay.
Anyway.
Back to the sad story.
I know what you were trying to say. Yeah.
On March 1st, Jody was able to be reunited with his parents back in Louisiana. After Jeff was taken into custody and was questioned, he confirmed that the sexual assault on Jody happened along with other students from the martial arts school.
No, that's so sad. So he was doing all of that while he was working there?
Yes, the whole time. On March 1st, Jody was able to be reunited with his parents back in Louisiana. After Jeff was taken into custody and he was questioned, he did confirm the sexual assault on Jody along with other students from the martial arts school.
And I can't even imagine how the mom must be feeling, because, like, she didn't know. Mm-hmm. But as a mom, I would feel horrible, because he's doing it at the studio and then you start dating him and bringing him into your house.
Yes. That guilt.
For her.
That guilt.
Because she couldn't have known, you know? Mm-hmm. He seemed like a perfect A person. You know?
And a lot of times it is those people, the ones that... Mm-hmm. And if they're going out of their way to spend time with your children, red flag, red flag, red flag.
Like, spend time with your children all the time.
Yes.
But, you know.
Between his confession and the medical evidence, they were able to charge him with multiple offenses. With everything that happened, June's emotional and physical health was declining, so like we were saying, it took a toll on her. Some were even accusing her of taking part in Jeff's plan, which, again, is heartbreaking.
That's horrible. Why did they do that?
And her close family and friends assured everyone there's no way she had anything to do with it. She had trusted him just like everyone else and couldn't imagine the depths of his depravity.
I hate when people do that.
I know. The entire family were stunned and felt completely betrayed by someone that they considered to be family. So do you know what story I'm covering yet? Has it sunk in yet?
Not yet.
Okay. It's fixing to. When Gary, the dad, learned of everything that Jeff had done, he was completely enraged. According to those close to him, he felt that any parent in this situation would have wanted to do the same thing. Eliminate the person who had hurt their child. At this point, Gary decided to take matters into his own hands. Okay. He was able to use his connections at the TV station he had worked at, and he gathered as many details he could about Jeff and his upcoming extradition to face charges in Louisiana. Gary soon learned that Jeff was scheduled to arrive at Baton Rouge Metropolitan Airport on Friday, March 16th, on an American Airlines flight from Dallas. Early that morning, Gary went to the airport wearing dark sunglasses and a cap to avoid being recognized. After checking the flight schedule, he sat in a cafe and he waited. As the time for Jeff's arrival was getting closer, Gary decided to go to the bar and have a drink to calm his nerves. The flight landed, and Gary went to the payphones near the plane's exit and called his best friend. He had confessed his entire plan to his best friend, and despite his friend trying to talk him out of it, Gary was dead set on what needed to be done. There was a TV crew setting up to get ready to video Jeff stepping off the plane. Jeff was handcuffed and being escorted by officers, one of them including Mike Barnett, the man who actually had to inform the family of Jody's abuse and what he had been through. Gary had a clear view of Jeff as he walked down the hallway. When Jeff was just a few feet away, Gary pulled out a gun and fired a single shot. Jeff collapsed on the floor, and Mike Barnett immediately restrained Gary and began asking, "Why, Gary, why?" Another officer grabbed the gun and immediately began to attend to Jeff, who had been shot in the right ear. Gary was not resisting at all. He surrendered immediately and allowed the officer to put him in handcuffs. All of this being captured by the TV station and was reporting live. Many viewers were watching the live broadcast when it happened, and although the number of viewers is unknown, the video has since been used in documentaries and is still posted online today, and those videos have millions of views.
Wow.
Do you want to see the video?
Looking at.
It's not gory or anything, and I may cut this part out just because I don't want this to be insensitive. It's not gory at all. Like, you don't see blood or anything. But this is the video.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
That's insane.
It is wild.
But, I mean, any sane mother, father, guardian would do the exact same thing.
Yeah, and that's what everybody says. Oh, if that happens to my kid, they won't need to go to prison because I'll take care of them. Yeah. So Jeff was rushed to a hospital, and he slipped into a coma. He ended up dying the next day due to the extensive blood loss. Gary was arrested and charged with second-degree murder. His attorney, who was also a close friend to Gary, posted the $100,000 bail. Gary was immediately released and admitted into a psychiatric ward, claiming he had been temporarily insane at the time of the shooting. Gary's attorney, Foster Fox, was working hard on his defense and was determined to keep him out of jail. The defense argued that Gary's actions were the result of an emotional breakdown after learning about the abuse inflicted on his son. It was reported that Jeff had told his lawyer before being extradited that June had agreed to meet him in California. Therefore, Gary reacted out of jealousy, not out of being heartbroken about what happened to his son. But remember, the FBI told her to go along with it. And so his attorney looks like an idiot by saying, oh, he did it because of jealousy. No, he did it for his son.
Yeah.
So public opinion was soon split. Some believed Gary had acted out of rage over the alleged relationship between Jeff and June, while others saw Gary as a father who simply wanted justice for his son. Gary later accepted a plea deal, pleading guilty to manslaughter, and Foster was confident that Gary would not spend any time in prison.
Well, I mean, people that claim he did it out of rage and, like, jealousy is honestly just trying to defend the suspect in question.
Yes. Because
if he did it out of rage and jealousy because, like, his ex-wife was dating him, he would have killed him a long time ago.
Yeah.
They had been probably dating for a while.
And then, nothing happened until he literally kidnapped his son. Yeah, it's wild.
Or he was his martial arts instructor, you know, if they did have a whole co-parenting relationship going on. He would have brought him to the practices, you know.
He would have
been around him.
Ample opportunity to do it before then. Exactly.
Yep. So those people are crazy.
They wildin'.
I definitely believe the side of he was probably insane. He couldn't bear to have this person who literally ruined his child's life.
Took his innocence.
Exactly. Walking around, because I guarantee you, in that court hearing, with the justice system and how it is, he probably would have only been sentenced for, what, 5 years?
Yeah, and he'd be right back on the streets to do it to the next kid.
Exactly.
Which is infuriating. So during the courtroom proceedings, the defense presented evidence that Gary had experienced. I already read that. Where am I at? Okay. Gary testified that he had been receiving messages telling him he had to protect his family. Gary stated that he began experiencing episodes where he needed to take action to stop any further harm coming to his family or anyone else's causing his temporary insanity. So Jody himself actually had to testify about the months of abuse he endured at the hands of Jeff. A specialist that had evaluated Jody after the ordeal was able to talk about what Jody had gone through and how it affected him, not just emotionally, but mentally as well. Again, having that constant battle and that power dynamic and between him and Jeff. The judge was obviously moved by all the testimonies and acknowledged the emotional weight of the tragic situation. He then determined that sentencing Gary to prison would not benefit anyone at this point. He ruled that Gary was no threat to himself or others at this time, and Gary was given a suspended 7-year sentence and 5 years of probation with 300 hours of community service, which he completed in 1989. So I was kind of curious about how the suspended sentence worked. So I looked it up, and it actually it means basically is a judge sentences a person for the jail or prison time that they would need, but they never have to actually go to jail or prison. So it is suspended. But if they mess up, they go to jail for the whole sentence. So if they get in trouble, they go ahead and send them to jail and they have to serve their entire sentence.
It's basically like defensive driving.
Yeah, kind of. So, of course, this ruling was met with mixed emotions. Jeff's family and some of the public argued that justice had not been served for Jeff, which all I have to say about that is who fucking cares?
Thank you, Max.
He kidnapped a child,
Jeff no more.
Took his innocence, took him away from his parents. Like, I'm not condoning people killing other people. Obviously, that's not great. That, yeah, obviously we don't condone that. But he had what was coming to him. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. Karma was definitely there.
So many others sympathized with Gary and all the pain that he and his family went through. Some seeing him as a hero that had done what any parent would have done under similar circumstances. Gary has been asked many times if he regretted what he had done. His response was always the same. He never regretted taking Jeff's life, believing it was the right thing to do for himself, his son, and his family. Years after everything went down, Gary had suffered from strokes, and it ultimately took his life at 68 years old. Gary was known for the immense love he had for his family and his willingness to take extreme measures to protect them. So now we have Jody. Jody struggled with conflicting emotions after Jeff's death. He wanted his abuser to face justice for what he had done, but he didn't want him to be killed. For a while, Jody actually resented his father for what he had done, but over time understood why his father had done what he did, and they were able to repair the relationship.
And I think that just goes to show how much Jeff groomed Jody.
And just that emotional turmoil that he had to go through. So Jody, and this does too, this shows you this. Jody later admitted to have recorded the footage of the incident with his father and Jeff, and he rewatched it numerous times. Jody was able to eventually overcome his childhood trauma. He ended up graduating from LSU like his father. He began working in violence prevention. He used his own experience to connect with others that have suffered from abuse. And in August of 2019, he actually published a book called Why, Gary, Why? The book was named after the words Mike Barnett said at the airport when Gary shot Jeff. The book is a detailed account of Jody's experiences with Jeff and the devastating effects of child abuse. Jody helps parents to see warning signs of potential predators, hoping to prevent other children from going through what he had gone through, which I've got that on my Kindle, and it's my next read. I think it'd be a good story.
Yeah, that sounds like a good book.
Jody's goal in sharing his story is not just to recount the past, but to help others heal. He aims to help educate parents and caregivers, empowering them to protect their children from similar situations. By openly discussing his trauma and providing resources, Jody hopes to inspire victims and their families to find a way to move past their tragedies, just as he did. And that is the story of Father's Love and how far he will go to protect his family. The end.
That was a good story.
That was a good story. It was. So,
I'm happy that Jody was able, not to fully move on, but cope with what happened.
Exactly. Yeah, and help others that are going through the same thing and say, look, you can come out on top. You will be okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought so too.
It's heartbreaking. I wonder how all the other kids are doing too, because it wasn't just Jody.
Yeah, and I wonder how many, I didn't really see how many others were, and they were minors, so they may have not released that information. But how many before this came out that didn't come forward and say, yeah, he did this to me, this happened to me, because they were embarrassed or ashamed, which they don't need to be, but still.
At a young age like that, you don't know anything that's going on, so it's just like.
And it's the 70s and 80s. That stuff is not talked about, especially against boys.
Exactly, yeah. That's a good point to make, too, because back in the day, it was just like, boys couldn't get
saved, So, yeah. I thought it was a good story. I'm excited to... Excited's not the right word. I'm ready to read his book. I want to see his point of view and how he coped with everything and what his thought process was on everything. That'll be interesting to hear.
And also, the story, you said it ties in with Father's Day, but it also kind of ties in with men's mental health.
Yes.
Because that's this month.
Yeah. So, happy Father's Day. Take care of your mental health. Happy Father's Day to your dad.
Yes.
And my dad. And my baby daddy.
Cool. Yep. happy Father's Day to the mothers, if you know what I'm saying. The mothers who had to be a mom and a dad.
Yeah.
I guess that's all.
That's it.
That's all we have. I don't know what time it is, but I don't think it was a long story.
It's 10:48. Not too bad. We're still working on stuff too. I've been talking to the Glow in the Dark podcast. She's been great. I'm really excited about that. So we need to follow her.
No, not yet. I would give it here. I'm pretty
sure. Everybody go follow her. Follow her. Follow us. Like, share, comment.
Comment your favorite emoji.
Yes. Yes.
Nobody reads my name.
And I guess that's it.
Yup, yup, yup.
So until next week, goodbye.
Stay safe.
Stay spooky.
Peace.
Goodbye.
Love. The power of drugs.
We do not support this message.